Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to Orlando Entrepreneurs. My name is Josh, and I'm a fellow entrepreneur here in Orlando, and I get to travel around and have conversations with founders and entrepreneurs and people who support the entrepreneurial community, like investors and such. So on today's show, I want to have a conversation with a founder of a company called Educate, which we're going to get into what that does, but he's the CEO and founder of this company. His name is Chris Whitlow, and I just want to introduce you to him, share his story, how he got started, how he got funding, and all sorts of incredible things that he's doing in his business. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Chris to the show. Chris, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Well, thank you, Josh. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, and I look forward to talking to you today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, let's get started with, you know, who are you as a, you know, as a person? Talk to us a little bit about who Chris is.
Yeah, Chris as a person is a lifelong learner, somebody who is really passionate about learning, but also passionate about teaching others. And I think that that's been something that's affected my career in totality, is that I've always looked for ways to assist others. And that's really where Educate came from, you know, was the ability to scale an idea that I had, that how can we bring financial guidance and education to everybody. I'm a husband of 15 years. I'm a father of two. And I'm really lucky to be able to call myself the CEO of Educate, where we have incredible people who work with us with incredible talents, and they are working alongside me to tackle this issue that we've taken on, this ability to kind of disrupt the industry as we know it of financial services.
Okay. So I guess let's go into a little bit more detail about what Educate is now. So, and then we could kind of unravel the story behind it.
Sure. So Educate is a financial wellness platform that helps organizations, employers, amplify their financial wellness programs. So most companies offer something like a retirement plan. You might have heard of it, called a 401k plan or a 403b plan. Some offer HSA and FSA accounts to help you save for healthcare or other flexible spending expenses. Some offer things like travel as a benefit, or even other things like, furthering your education, tuition reimbursement, helping out with student loans. So there's lots of financial benefits that employers are offering to their employees. And Educate is the platform that helps amplify how the employer communicates around those benefits, integrates those benefits into a single platform, and then scales access to those benefits across their entire organization. And while doing that, we also deliver financial guidance and tools to help employees understand how not only to manage their current financial situations, but how to plan for the future and how to incorporate those benefits that are being offered to them into their everyday lives. And so that's what Educate does.
Awesome. So other than, you know, to be a more competitive employer, to attract better, you know, better talent, why else should a company care about the financial literacy or education or the financial well-being of their employees? Like, what? Why else does it matter?
Well, I think it's no secret that the relationship of, you know, pay between an employer and an employee is kind of the center or the ethos behind why we work. I mean, financial wellness is why we're going to work each and every single day, so that we can provide for our lives to be financially independent. And there are two places primarily where people learn about money. First is their parents. There's a paternal relationship, obviously, with your parents. You're watching their culture and values around money and how they engage with money. And the second big piece of that is your job, because that's where you get your support from. Your paycheck comes from your job. And so a lot of what you learn about money comes from the employer that you're at and the people that you're interacting with and the time that you spend there. And so employers are really having this, they're having this paternal relationship with their employees, and it behooves them to want to allow their employees to optimize how those dollars are spent and utilized, not only because it makes for happier employees and, like you said, a more competitive working environment, but because when employees aren't struggling trying to engage with their benefits, or they're not struggling trying to figure out how to manage their paycheck, they're able to focus on more meaningful things like being more productive, being more present at work, being a better coworker, not struggling or you know, trying to figure out how to deal with these day-to-day things that we all have to deal with, but we also know we need to come into work and do our jobs each and every single day. So we don't want those two things to be at odds with one another. We want there to be a symbiotic relationship between your money and your job.
Yeah. So that brings up a great point. When I was going through college and then I graduated and I became a real estate agent. So I was working in the real estate industry, and that's a commission only job, by the way, for those listening right out there, which means that if you don't sell, you don't eat. And I worked in, you know, to pay for the bills and to pay for my first job, I got a job in hospitality. I was working as a server, and I was, you know, making tips and a little bit of money there. So it provided a little bit of security. But I'll tell you, it is really hard to do my career, or at the time it was real estate. It's really hard to do that when you're worried about money. It's hard to give your best to your customers or your clients. So I think that what you're doing is really important. Let's go back in time a little bit to, you know, I'm looking through your history on LinkedIn, and I see a lot of financial consulting, and you know, you've been in this industry learning and teaching about money for a long time. How did you even get started in this? Were your parents in this? Like, did you learn this from your parents, or where was your start in education about finance?
Yeah, so going back to what we just talked about, your first interaction with money usually comes from your parents, right? You're going to see how they're interacting with it. You're going to see the way that they treat it. And that was me. Like, I saw my father and my stepmother, how they engaged and talked about money and how they spent money. But I also got to see how my father worked in business. He you know, worked from a car salesman all the way up to becoming the co-owner of a car dealership. And that was my whole life. So if I, you know, on the weekends or during the week, if I wanted to spend time with them, I got to be at the car lot sweeping it. So I started out sweeping the car lot, and then I got to wash cars, and then I got to work in like kind of the parts department, and then the sales department when I got a little older, and finance. And I got to learn everything about the automotive industry, which is helping consumers, right? But also they're in it to make a profit. But my curiosity was always around how I could assist individuals. So when I was selling the cars, I wasn't really having to put food on my plate, as you were talking about earlier. You know, you eat, which is the commission job. You got to eat. I still had a house to go back to. And you know, this is for extra fun and extra cash. So for me, it took time to get to know who these people were and what they were struggling with and what they really could afford. I wasn't really thinking about how to sell them extras. I was trying to help them. And then when I learned about the financial side of it, about the loans and interest and credit reports, I started to learn about what made a credit score better or worse. And I would sit down and actually have conversations with people about how they could improve their credit score back when I was like 20 years old. I mean, I was very young doing this. And I would spend so much time working with these customers. I remember I used to get yelled at because it was like, what are you doing in there for so long talking with these people? Like, you need to sell them something and move on, and get more customers waiting. And I would say, well, I'm teaching them how to increase their credit score so they can get a better interest rate next time. And that wasn't something that you did in a for-profit business. And so my thought was, well, maybe I need to do something else. Maybe I go into the investment world and I could learn to help people there. And so I joined Morgan Stanley Dean Witter and did the same thing, where I wanted to sit down and do financial planning with folks. And what I found with that industry was that it really was a lot about selling as well. It was about, you know, providing people access to investments and selling them investments that definitely align with their interests. I mean, there's regulation that forces, you know, making sure that we know our customers and things like that. But there were definitely things that you needed to do to hit quotas. And so I really found myself wanting to just help people. And so my entire career was always got to the point to where I was like, okay, how can I help people in this situation? How can I use my skills in order to teach them something? And I think that that culmination of my career led me to educate, to being able to build this software that can help scale this problem.
So this was in you, like in your early 20s, you're teaching people about their credit and they're like, you know, the bosses are going, just sell them a car and you know, move on to the next person, right?
Just move on. Yeah.
But this education, like you wanted to really, you know, really help you. Just kind of, you know, through your experience and you've worked with all sorts of people probably on the spectrum of wealth, you know, for the audience listening, what are some tips for, you know, people who are maybe just starting out their entrepreneurial journey in terms of money, right? So people who are just getting their start, like what are some tips that you've seen over the years and working with all these different types of people about money? Could you give us a few?
Well, one of the things I noticed was that it didn't matter how wealthy you were. There seemed to be two types of individuals that were common, you know, that you came across. There were those that were financially vigilant, meaning they knew where every penny went, right? They counted every penny that they had and were very observant. And then there are those that kind of went through life financially unaware, that they, you know, the finances just worked themselves out and they moved from one thing to the next without much of a plan. And so the folks that we saw that were really successful, and not just the folks, I worked with lots of institutions as well, but those who were very successful were very vigilant about understanding the ups and the downs, what the associations of different things were to their money and how they emotionally connected with their money, the way they made purchasing decisions, things like that. Those that were financially unaware, they just kind of went through life. They didn't really think about it much. And it didn't necessarily mean that they didn't come out well financially, but they were only ever going to do as well as life allowed them to do, right? The hand that they were given. And so the thing I tell everybody is that even if you're teaching children about money, you need to teach people how to become financially confident about their finances. And if you can do that, that makes somebody vigilant. It makes them become interested because they have that confidence. And so they start to investigate. And kind of like when you go down the rabbit hole of Google, right? When you start investigating something, when you start looking in and researching it, you start to become much more aware and competent about how you can make change for yourself. Not everything works out, but it's that experience that helps you make better decisions down the road. Finances is very much a contact sport. You have to do it. You have to get engaged. And you can't just read a book about it and expect that you're going to know the right things to do at the right time. I was doing an interview the other day and they asked me about that same thing. And I said, hey, I could read everything you could know about football, right? But put me out on the field with the people in the NFL and I would get killed, right? There's just no way that I'm going to have the same level of experience by reading about it versus actually going out and doing it. But if you do it, if you get engaged and you're vigilant about it, you're going to be much more successful.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm still waiting to become a billionaire. I've read all the books about becoming a billionaire. It hasn't happened yet. So.
Exactly.
I got to start doing it, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. So how did you then take this and build a business? Because your business is doing really well and we could talk about, you know, where the business is at. But how did you get the start? Like you came up with the idea one day, you were working at, you know, one of these financial firms and you're like, I should start a business. You know, how did that happen?
Well, I think with most people my age, it probably all goes back to like video games, right? So, you know, I was one of those children that had the first Nintendo that came out and then the PlayStations and kind of the history of that. But when the internet came about, I mean, it was something I was very interested in, more so probably from a video game perspective, which led me to investigating, you know, how do websites get built and how does information get exchanged on the internet. And that led into my my first interest into development and coding and trying to solve problems using technology. And so I definitely remember being that go-to technologist at work, whether I was at Morgan Stanley or UBS. It was the place where, you know, people could come to me and I'd love to give them answers and with tech, and I would love to build things with tech as well. And so as I sat there and started to think about how to solve this problem, what we noticed was that the problem that we were solving wasn't a content problem, meaning that if you want to learn about your finances, there's plenty of information out there in the books at the library or on the internet someplace that you can get access to relatively free. So it's not a content problem that we were having. And then I didn't think it was really a product problem either, because the industry has done a great job of creating financial products. As technology has gotten better, you're seeing more personal financial products that come out that can help assist you to make decisions and, you know, create investments and build your wealth. And so if it's not a content problem, if it's not a product problem, what is the problem? And to me, the problem was distribution. It was, how do you take that person who is financially unaware and actually help them become vigilant? Well, you got to get their attention. You got to start to, you know, build confidence in them. You have to get them invested in themselves in order to get them to build that confidence and become more vigilant. And so when we started to look at building Educate needed to be a platform that enabled distribution, and doing it in a very unique and engaging way, more so than it was about delivering our own content or delivering our specific product.
Absolutely. Okay. So you had this idea, and I'm going to, you know, from when you were building or playing Nintendo, by the way, what was your favorite Nintendo game?
Man, I beat all the Marios, but I think Contra, if you go back to Contra, that was one of those ones where you could put in the secret codes in the beginning and get a little boost and play the game. And you could play with your friends too at the same time, which was really neat.
Yeah, it was up, up, down, down, left, right,
left, right. Left, right, left, right. A, B, B, start or something, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so sorry, I totally sidetracked us there. But, you know, so you had this idea of, you know, because you wanted to, you know, really solve this problem. So how did you actually start the business? You know, you're working, you had a job. I don't know if you were married or had kids at the time, but like,
yeah,
like, you know, what happened there?
So one of the things I try to tell people and anyone listening to this, you know, it's so important that you solve the problems that you are meant to solve. Because I come across problems all day long and I come across solutions for those problems. And I got to tell you, I'm not the person to solve a lot of those problems, right? I don't have the expertise. I don't have the energy or the money to do it. And so I really think it's important that you pick problems to solve that you and you alone can solve. And so I happen to be at the intersection of a very unique time. I'm about the same age as the 401k plan. So 1974 was the ERISA Act that enabled kind of the 401k plan. So they became popular in the 80s. And technology allowed the evolution of that plan, you know, managing a lot of people together under different accounts and getting information passed and allowing you to make investment choices and, you know, having statements and bringing it online. All of those things really enabled the growth of this, this retirement plan. And I happened to grow all alongside it. Whereas a lot of folks who I was working with had been in the industry a lot longer than me. And so the way I was looking at problems and trying to solve problems was very different from maybe some of my peers at the time. And then as I was kind of working through my career, I really gravitated towards, how do we solve solutions that can help people, you know, become more towards retirement? My focus had always been about getting those that were uninvolved more involved, less about getting those who were involved more so involved. And so one of the things that our clients had constantly told us was that, hey, what can we be doing in order to get those who aren't contributing to contribute? How do we get people to just get started? And the traditional sense of getting people engaged in the retirement plan usually enabled or usually was enabled by somebody going to the company in person, meeting with people, doing a big group meeting and saying, hey, you know, if you want to come and get enrolled, come up here and we'll talk to you about how to do that. And you would do that and no one would come, right? And so it was very expensive to be able to sit down one-on-one and understand with people why. And what you found, though, when you started to do some of that investigative work was that, you know, somebody was thinking about having a baby, or maybe they were just getting married, or they were in the process of buying a house for the first time. You know, we all have these financial journeys where we go to school and we get married, buy a house, we have children, you know, and so we kind of track at the same place. And I just found that there were conflicts with folks between them wanting to engage. It's not that they didn't want to engage. They just had other competing interests at the time. And that started to get my wheels turning when I started thinking about, if we were going to scale this, how do you have an individual interaction with 1,000 people? You have to have a technology cloud-based platform to do that. I mean, that's what Facebook's allowed us to do, and LinkedIn's allowed us to do, and Twitter has allowed us to do. Imagine Twitter, the reach, if you had to put stamps on every single one of those tweets, how much would it cost to send a tweet, right? I mean, like if in the old ways. And so using technology to scale this problem became very apparent to me. And as we worked on the business, working out the kinks of what the clients needed or how the employees needed to get engaged, it iterated on that, right? We got better over time. And that's how we got to where we're at today.
And that's great. So you had the idea. And you said we're gonna go ahead and do this. What were the first couple steps that you took? You know, quitting the job. You know, going buying the domain, building the website, coming up with the idea, putting together the pitch deck, and going look for money. Like, what were the tactical steps that you took? And what did the wife say at this time?
Yeah. So I was actually, you know, you had mentioned it earlier. Like, did you have children? Were you married? So I was married. I started Educate in 2013. My daughter was born in 2010. So, you know, I had a 3-year-old at the time, and it's not the right time to start a business.
It is not the right time.
But when you look at your life and you think about coulda, shoulda, woulda, a lot of things started to align. A lot of things started to come together in terms of making a transition from the job I was at for, I think I was there for 5.5 years, getting to the point in my career where I felt like I was the person to solve this problem. So going back to that and saying, does anyone else have this expertise that I have? Are they in a place, in a position to do this like I am? This is a problem I should be solving. Like, I have a better chance at this success than I think most would or are willing to take the chance. It was also right at the time that meetups and things were starting to become a little more popular. And so it was easy for me to go to a Ruby on Rails meetup or go to a Startup Weekend event or go to a designer event. And then one of my friends at the time was talking about, you know, doing something for the community in terms of getting a technology incubator or a you know, some type of accelerator program in place, and this concept of Starter Studio came about. And so I don't think that without a lot of those tools, I would have been at a place where I could take the risk to separate myself from a very long career in the corporate job, and take my child and my wife at this time and say, hey, we're just going to leap off into this. But what Starter Studio enabled us to do, because we were part of the first class of Starter Studio, and enabled me to take a break, a bit of a sabbatical, to say, here is a finite time period. I think the program was 3 months. And we don't have a business yet, because it wasn't really thinking about a business at this time. It was more, I have this idea. I have this skill set. I've kind of worked through the problem. I've gone to meetups. I've met with people. I can enter this program and take advantage of the other like-minded folks, the mentorship, the other entrepreneurs, the fact that I could meet really good and intelligent people who wanted to solve similar problems like myself. And I can come together, and then during this finite time period, we can set goals, test our ideas, see if those ideas are met with either, you know, hey, this isn't what you should be doing, or no, we really like this. And when I went through and did those things, all of the tests came up positive. The goals were met. The action was always plan a little bit, set a goal. If you hit the goal, plan some more. And so as we made it through that, we just continued to meet those goals and find interest. And I think that started to give me the confidence to continue to do it and take the risk necessary. But without that infrastructure, I don't know that I could have had the confidence to do it on my own.
The Starter Studio helped you start, and they helped you kind of make that leap from corporate into the startup world.
Yeah, and the infrastructure of you know, the technology meetups and the design meetups and the like-minded individuals that were starting to get out of their homes and starting to come to meetups and putting themselves out there to talk about things that they're interested in. All of that led to me going, okay, there's a place here for me, right? I'm not doing this by myself. And I will tell you that between my stint of working at the first firm I worked at and the last firm I worked at, I started my own thing in between. And I started that in my home. And I tried to do it all on my own. Like, I didn't leave the house. I didn't go talk to anybody. I didn't go to the library. I didn't, you know, it was right in my own little industry. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And I won't say that failed miserably, but it was not as successful as I hoped it would be because I did not have the confidence, I think, to get out and talk about it and involve other people. And it's amazing what a community can do to help lift up an idea like Educate.
Yeah. So then you went on. So you had to do a few things, and you started doing this, proving it out within Starter Studio. You had to go after clients, and you could talk to us about, you know, who is an ideal client now, but like you could talk about, you know, maybe getting started. How did you acquire clients? And then two, you actually also went after capital. So let's start with the first one. Back then when you got your start in this, who was your ideal client and how were you getting, you know, how were you getting sales?
So going back to the concept, solve the problem that you're meant to solve, right? So I came from this industry that we were serving. The software is meant to serve the industry. And since Orlando is such a great place for conferences, there are a few conferences in my industry that happen to be in Orlando, you know, every year. And we had one coming up during Starter Studio, and it was very expensive to be able to go. So we couldn't afford to buy a ticket and go there. So what I did was I hung out at the Starbucks that was by the conference in the hotel. And as people would walk by that I would either recognize or I would recognize the firm they were at, as I was just, you know, in the Starbucks, I would pull them in and say, hey, I want to show you something. And on the iPad, I had this idea kind of, you know, put out in a video or screen format. And I said, would you use something like this? Is this something that you think that your clients or you yourself would find valuable? And the resounding answer from that was absolutely yes. And it led to the first beta customer we had, which was a larger, what we call in our industry, a broker dealer, but a larger broker dealer who was looking to disrupt the industry around financial wellness. And so, putting myself out there and going to a place and telling people that, hey, I'm working on this new thing and this is what it does and this is where it's going. Although at that point, you know, to tell you, Josh, like the software wasn't anywhere near where it is today. A lot of that was fake it till you make it, right? I mean, it was a lot of, you know, how can we visually show people what the idea is without having a lot of it built out? But it led to getting these engagements.
That's great, man. So you were hanging out in Starbucks and you're like, okay, here comes another one. Hey man, let me pitch this. Let me show you. But it worked. You got your first beta client.
Yeah. They all have to wear, you know, when you go to a conference, they all wear those, lapel or I forget.
The lanyard things, right?
Yeah. The lanyards with the name tags with their, you know, are they a sponsor? Are they a speaker? You could see their firm on it. And yeah, absolutely. You know, and they want to talk to people. And so having an iPad there to say, hey, let me show you something. What do you think about this?
Wow. What a great idea, because you know, them walking out, you're like, that is a target. There, that's a customer right there walking out. I wish all customers walked around with that lanyard saying, hey, sell me something, you know, make it a lot easier. So, all right. So then let's talk about the funding side of the business, right? So you started picking up clients, started getting some traction, started proving, you know, that this is viable, that it makes sense. It's good for the company, good for the employee. How did you get money for this?
So we bootstrapped the company for the first 3 years, really, you know, through client engagements, through a lot of hard work from the team, and a lot of sacrifice from the team, that would kind of organically happened. And, you know, I have some reflection on that I think we should talk about a little later, but to answer more specifically your question, we then had an opportunity to apply for Orlando's second stage accelerator. At the time, it was called the Firespring Fund. Now it's the Starter Studio Seed Fund. But once again, the community at large pulled their funds together and provided the first seed investment into Educate through us getting into this second stage seed accelerator. And that was a very critical time and moment that created inertia for the company in many ways. But there was definitely a struggle prior to that happening, not just in figuring out where capital would come from, but understanding how to approach to get capital, how to correctly articulate the value of the company to different investors, and doing some soul searching on what did raising capital mean for the company? Like what did we really want in terms of having an investor? So a lot of those things were definitely a challenge. And once we had that inertia, that's when the chips started to fall into place.
Yeah. So talk to us about the first dollar you went after. All right, so it was a Firespring Fund, which is now the seed fund. But like, did you do any other types of investments beyond that? Because that kind of gets you started. Did you go on for later rounds?
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying, where the inertia kind of got started with that, because at that moment, that money assisted us in being able to reel in and land our first big customer. Because in the enterprise space, there's a lot of, you know, travel, and there's a lot of insurance, and there's a lot of things that you have to have in place in order to really succeed there. And so without that investment, I'm not 100% sure that we would have been able to make that that client commitment. And so once that happened, that success story and understanding the value add of capital and how it impacts your business, it helped me really articulate the value of the company. And I think Firespring Fund, which is the Starter Studio seed accelerator, the mentorship meant something different to me. And it's not that I didn't hear a lot of these things when I went through Starter Studio the first time. I just don't know that mentally I was at the place where I understood how to apply those things. But it was the right time and the right people and the right mentorship that enabled me to be able to package it together to where less than, I would say, I think 7 months after getting that first investment, we were able to acquire our second much larger investment from an outside investor.
Awesome. Now, you said you had a reflection point in the middle of fundraising and the importance of funding and capital for startups. Like, could you share some insight as to what happened in your brain just then when I saw you light up? Like, what thoughts were going through your head?
Well, I think different people are going to approach this very differently based on their stage of life, right? And so for me, I started a little later in life. I mentioned to you, I had a 3-year-old when I first started this, and my wife and I made a big commitment into going down this road. And then somewhere along the way, we had another commitment, right? I had another child. So my son came along in 2014. And so now I got the 4-year old and the new baby along, and I'm thinking about this business and this change that I made about, you know, what this means to my family. Like, I'm going to work every day for my children, for the livelihood of our family. And so as I started thinking about raising money and what that looked like, I was very conscientious about who our investor would be, what value add they would bring to the business, and what the structure of that investment would be. And as, you know, as time went on and I started to understand that more, it allowed me to be more open and relational to the investors that we approached. Whereas in the beginning, as I talked to investors, I think it was difficult for me to form relationships with them that were based on, you know, a mutual agreement of what I was trying to do with the company and what they were going to get out of the company. Right. I mean, and that's why, let's be honest, investors invest in your company because they want a return on their capital. Right. We all should know that. So I think the reflection to me was, you know, as I became more confident and sure in myself and had self-reflection and awareness of how I was growing the company and what the meaning behind it was a lot easier for me to articulate that message and build those relationships with investors. And this is one of the things I would tell every entrepreneur out there. When you read online and you read about investment and they say they invest in the team, they invest in the people. The idea is great, yes, but it's about the people. It's a lot about your relationship that you're able to form with those investors, the value that they're able to bring to you from their insight to you, right? And that's going to depend a lot on who your investors are and who you are, what stage of life you're in. But that means everything to them, because if they're not able to build that relationship, if they're not able to transcend the information and the experience they have to you, then they don't have a lot of interest in investing in your company. And so you have to be open to take that advice, to take that information, and to walk with them in unison or in parallel towards a same goal. And for me, that was, I want to say that was difficult for me to do, coming from a successful career that I had and where I was in life and what I put into the company, and not really knowing at the time what we wanted the outcome to be or how we would work along with investors. But once that became like clear and apparent, being able to walk into a meeting, know if this investor was the right person for me to want to open up to and engage in a relationship with that person, became much easier. And building those relationships is what's going to help enable you to close that investment.
Yeah. Did you say no to any money out there?
There's a lot of ways to say no. So I'm going to say yes, said no to a lot of different places. Okay. Not necessarily in the sense of calling them up on the phone and saying no, but, you know, choosing how you re-engage or how you follow up and do things can oftentimes be a no. If your heart's not in it, then you need to redirect it to something else.
What kind of investors or advisors, or, you know, what are some signs that entrepreneurs, when they're asking for money, should they go, if they see this flag, they should say no, or find another way to say no politely to that kind of money? What kind of signs would you advise entrepreneurs to look out for and say, don't accept this kind of money from this kind of investor, or don't use names?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's important for you to understand why they're investing, where's the money come from, right? So that was one of the questions, you know, just coming from the financial services industry. And I was a licensed investor, right? And so, that industry, you spend a lot of times in compliance, you know, getting to know your customer. Why are they investing? What's the risk tolerance of that investor? Where does the funds come from? How did they get the funds? And so, you know, it's that was very apparent to me. If someone couldn't have that conversation with me, or if I wasn't comfortable being able to ask that question in some way, then it probably wasn't a good fit for me. And I think that you have to be comfortable enough knowing who are you building this relationship with, and what is the expectation that they have for you. And different types of investors are going to have different expectations. And one of the things I tell my team is that, and I tell myself is that even when times are great, even when things are going good, always remember that they probably will get bad again. Right. And so when times get bad, that's when you start to understand, you know, what type of person you're really dealing with, because that they're going to have input into your business. The other thing is be very wary of people who want you to pay them in some respect to consult to your business. If we're all mutually trying to grow this thing for the reasons that, you know, there's something down the road that we're going to accomplish and everyone's going to participate in, then there's no reason why someone should be asking you for money up front just to get to know them or to work with them or see if they like you. So I would say stay away from those types of individuals. You know, and then I would say just making sure that there's domain expertise. You know, you hear that a lot in terms of find investors that can give you more than just the money. But you really do need individuals, especially early on in your business, that not who can just help you in your business, but those that who can understand why certain things are happening in your business. And so if you articulate your business to somebody, and they're not able to articulate it back to you in a way where you understand that they understand what it is that you do or why, you know, there may, if something happens in your business with your customers or, you know, how that they can't, then that's, I think, a red flag as well. So you have to make sure, look, getting an investor is much like finding, you know, getting married or getting into a relationship with somebody. You're going to get to know these individuals very, very well. And you have to be able to get along with them. And there has to be that personal relationship. You have to come together.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. So now you guys are, how old is the company? You told me this, I totally forgot.
So I think we incorporated in October of 2013. So we'll hit 5 years right around the corner.
Awesome. So what has been the biggest evolution, the biggest pivot, the biggest change, or, you know, what has been the most monumental change that's happened since you started to where you are now?
So the best I could come up with when I started this business is that we were going to deliver 401k education in the cloud, distributed, kind of like what we talked about, but it was focused on the 401k. Last year, we did a team retreat and the team collectively, like we talked about the vision of the company, and we made a decision that it was time to rebrand the company. And so we went through a rebranding experience, but the rebranding experience had little to do with what it looked like or, you know, what the colors were going to be. It was the meaning behind moving away from just focusing on the 401k and focusing on the totality of an individual's financial journey at work. And so being able to help employees connect with all of their financial benefits, not just the 401k, understanding that employers have a great opportunity to get engaged by helping people become unaware to more financially vigilant, but they could do so whether they're trying to help them, you know, figure out how to buy a house or create a budget or pay down debt or manage their student loans or take care of aging parents or, I mean, you name it, the list goes on. All of us are focused on something financially. And the biggest pivot for the company was taking that single financial benefit and realizing that financial wellness will become the single most financial benefit that a company offers. The 401k, the budget, the debt repayment, whatever it is just one element of the financial products needed to be able to deliver a robust financial wellness platform. And that to me was a monumental change for the company. And it's really exciting to see how companies are embracing that and they want to help their employees.
Yeah. So here we are almost 5 years later. What kind of companies do you work with? Does your group, you know, really specialize in help?
So our average company size is somewhere around 1,500 employees. Okay. I want to say, We partner with financial advisors who work on retirement plans, and we partner with health and welfare brokers, and we partner with different financial product providers to work with them on their clients. And those folks we tend to work with, and they can come from small companies or larger companies. But generally, it's a company who very much cares about their employees, wants to figure out how to get 100% engagement. How do we engage everybody at our company so that, that we can assist them in delivering something of value to them outside of them just coming into the doors and working each and every single day? We want to make an impact on their lives. Those are the companies that are most interested in being our customer. And it's great to see that a lot of companies are coming out and saying, we want this. Like, this is something that is important to us. And I don't think the low unemployment rate help, you know, it doesn't hurt us, right? I mean, it's like, it is a very competitive environment out there too right now. And so there are a lot of companies that are very trying to be as competitive as possible to get new employees.
Awesome. So, like, let's use for example, since we're here in Orlando, you know, we have a lot of hotels, a lot of tourism, hospitality. Those have a tremendous amount of employees, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just say that there's a hospitality group out there that is interested in, you know, employee retention. So they want to try to keep their employees there. You know, they're going through all the ways of like, how can we, you know, do better job about, you know, serving our employees so that we could serve the guests better. Like, how would you guys interact with them, or how would they find you? You know, what does that kind of relationship look like with you guys, and what would you do for them?
Well, first, let me say that we don't often think about it, but almost half of the working Americans make $15 an hour or less, you know, and they're working on an hourly job, and sometimes more than one job. And so Central Florida is an excellent example of where you have companies where there's a high number of hourly wage workers to management, right? And they can be affected by their car breaking down and not being able to make it to work, or not participating in, you know, getting their health taken care of because they can't afford to do those things. And so we do see as one of our better client industries and target industries, the hospitality, lodging, and hotel space, because of that. And so what we do is, you know, we engage with that organization to understand, one, do they understand who their employees are? Is it possible for you to, you know, look across your employee base? Yes, we have different age groups, and, you know, we have different socioeconomic folks in our, so we can generalize about our employees, but do you know what's really important to them? Do you understand what they're focusing on financially? And so we help the employer assess and understand from a data perspective, what is it that their employees want to focus on, and how can they amplify the communication and delivery of guidance to those employees so it is meaningful to them. The next thing we do is that you'll find in those organizations that if you compared the participation of the 401k to the average industry in America, that they don't have as high as participation, but they would love more participation in the retirement plan. And so what we find is that, you know, as we were talking earlier, it's not that employees don't want to engage. It's just that they are focused on something different. They're focused on solving some other challenge, and that they can't necessarily participate in the retirement plan right now. When you see that, it's an excellent opportunity for you to bring in financial wellness, because you can now provide a benefit to those employees where the retirement plan traditionally isn't a fit for them. But could be so in the future. And so we then deliver step-by-step financial guidance to those employees who might be struggling with, how do I take care of my student loan debt, or how do I rent, or do I buy a house? And then what does that mean? Or do I need to budget? What type of budget? Is it a zero-based budget, a percentage-based budget? What's the best budget for me? And so by delivering financial guidance to those employees, they're getting access to resources that traditionally they're not used to having access to unless someone was trying to sell them a product. You know, most of the folks who make an hourly wage, they get their financial advice from the people who are selling them the financial products. So I need a mortgage. Mortgage guy tells me everything about how to get a mortgage and what it is. I need a car, like Chris back in the day, like Chris is teaching you about how to buy a car. And that's not the best place usually to get advice. You want to get unbiased advice that, I shouldn't say advice, but guidance to help you understand where your journey is supposed to go. And then introducing those employees to employee benefits. Most companies roll all of their employee benefits out during open enrollment. And the problem with that is there's an overwhelming amount of information from healthcare to, you know, voluntary benefits to the retirement plan. There's a ton of information that comes to an employee during the week of or 2 weeks of open enrollment, and they have to make a decision in a very short period of time. And so to roll all the benefits out at once it can be overwhelming. And so having those benefits in a centralized place where they're integrated into a platform that the employees can get access to and learn about the most meaningful benefit at the most meaningful time, right? It's the right benefit at the right time. That then becomes the thing that can help engage those employees. And then collecting the anecdotal evidence, right? The stories behind how employees are being affected, how their lives are being changed. How do you measure their confidence with their finances? Is their confidence getting better over time? How can you iterate on the program? So, like I said, Educate's a platform that helps amplify a financial wellness program. And I think most employers today, they don't realize they already have a financial wellness program. Their employees are getting a paycheck, right? They're hearing things from their coworkers. They have a retirement plan. They might have some of these other benefits. That is in regards to financial wellness. How do you then amplify it? How do you give it something of scale, purpose, integration? That's how we help them.
So who at the organization, like, so the people listening in, they might not be in the situation where, you know, they're maybe in HR or something like that, where they have this, but they might know someone who'd be a good fit for, you know, to connect you with, you know, to saying, hey, this is really important. You should listen to this podcast, you know, listen to Chris here. Who at an organization, do you most work with? Like, do you work most closely with?
Well, we typically work with, you know, somebody in human resources. Usually the decision maker is going to be the chief financial officer or the chief executive officer or the chief human resource officer, somebody who is kind of leading the group and can make the decision. But employees have to be vigilant about their money. And voicing their concern about wanting access to more information, better information, more organized information, more concise information should be on their mind, right? And that's what we're helping folks do. We're helping them become more confident with their finance. And so a great place to start is that if you're listening to this or you think that this is something that would be relevant for your coworkers or for your organization, shoot an email to human resources, shoot an email to your manager, shoot an email to somebody and say, hey, look, this is important. And I know our coworkers are struggling with these issues. And this is something that would be meaningful. We should take a look at it. Usually it is that, once again, anecdotal evidence that helps these organizations make the decision that this is something they should be implementing.
Yeah. So what does the future look like for you and for Educate?
So when I started this 5 years ago, and you went around, this was an innovative new idea, right? And there weren't a lot of people talking about it. And today, I think we probably are in the paper a couple of times, you know, a month or maybe even a few times a month talking about this. And there's a momentum of, yes, this is important. We want to do it. So the future really is where competitors are coming out. We're seeing industry providers who have been in this space a long time. They're embracing this. Financial wellness is becoming a staple benefit across all of these institutions and the industry. And that is one, incredibly humbling, and it's great to see, because I know that we're making change. But two, it lets me know that there's a place for us and our employees and the importance of what we're doing. And so the future may look like us partnering up strategically with another group to even amplify financial wellness even more, or it may look like us continuing to grow and scale and adding more jobs here in Orlando and growing the Orlando ecosystem. But I think the one thing that we know is that the impact that we're making is far and wide. Our employees enjoy working on solving this problem because it's more than just a job. It's meaningful to them. And we're constantly innovating. We're coming up with new things that we can do to help bring this awareness. And so that to me is great. And going back, you know, we want to return value to our shareholders, right? And so we're looking for opportunities to continue to do that as well.
Very cool. Why Orlando? So you could have chose anywhere in the world to live and to build this company. Why did you choose Orlando?
Well, funny story. So I was dating my wife before we came here. She was in Chicago. I was in Houston. It's another long story, but we haphazardly ended up in Orlando. And coming from big cities, we always thought that we would maybe go someplace else. Like this was just a stop on our journey in life. And it's incredible to watch the growth of culture in Orlando. And it so much mimics our own family. You know, my first real job was here. We got married here. We've built a home here. We have children here. We participate in the schools that our children go to here. We built a business here. And every year Orlando surprises me about something that they're doing, whether it's the tech community growing or, you know, what the university is doing to get involved or what the Knights are doing, or what the city is doing, or what the industry, the hospitality and tourism industry is doing. It's a great city. And there's great people and there's great things happening here. And Orlando is just a great place. And so we've been a benefactor of that growth and that change in culture, and getting to see it firsthand. And I think getting to the age that we're at, it's how do we give back and participate more? How do we become more of a participant? And I would encourage those who are listening, who live here, who love Orlando as well. That's something that you can do. Get involved, ask how you can participate, you know, get on a board, chair something. Like, that journey will help you become much more satisfied with the place that you're contributing to. And ultimately you're the benefactor of.
Yeah. Are there any questions that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you? I'd completely screwed it up.
I don't think so. You ask a lot of great questions, and you know, the takeaway I have is I wish there was a podcast like this when I was getting started to help me know that this is the decision that I needed to make, right? And that if more individuals can take that leap of faith and try it, because it is a contact sport, going back to what you were saying before, I mean, you literally have to get out your office and go do something. You have to meet somebody. You have to share a cup of coffee with them or share a conversation with them. That action is what is going to help you not just identify the problem that you should be solving, right? Because going back to that, solve the problem you should be solving, but it's going to help you identify the like-minded people that want to help you solve that problem. And the community at large is here to assist in that. And there are resources available more so than there ever were, to help do that. And being part of that is great. So no, I I think you covered a lot, and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for that. I think you did pretty good yourself. In terms of people listening out there, if they want to connect with you and, you know, have a conversation with you, where's the best place for people to find you?
Well, I'm always working at a Starter Studio, so we're here, and we're committed to being here, you know, and in some capacity. And I think that coming to the events, you'll catch me at times. But if you want to get in touch with me directly, reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I'm very, very responsive with that and connecting and talking with folks there. But I'd love to help in any way I can.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you, Chris, for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun hearing your story and just listening to the advice and wisdom from having the idea, from taking the leap to getting first customers, to pitching your idea, and to getting money. So this has been a really interesting conversation, and I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. I enjoyed being here.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, listening into this podcast interview with Chris, just thank you for being a benefactor, as Chris would say, to Orlando and to Orlando entrepreneurs. If you're listening into the show, one thing that I always like to ask my audience is, would you please reach out to our guests and let them know that you heard them on the show and that what they said made an impact in your life in some way or another, and that blesses me, and that helps, you know, helps my guests to continually connect back into the community, which that they're giving their time here serving. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening into the show. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. All right, bye everyone. We'll see you, Chris.
See you later.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.